For today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, The Doctrine of the Manifestation, as we pick up in Romans chapter 8, verse 19. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
The earnest expectation of the creation is waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God. Now, unfortunately, there are those radical groups that take a verse like this and a phrase, manifestation of the sons of God, and they use it to build a whole pernicious doctrine. And this doctrine has a way of cycling. It becomes popular about every 40 years. 30 years, maybe. The last time it was popular was 1948, and it's beginning to get popular again. So 30 years span, 35 years. This doctrine of the manifestation of the sons of God is sort of a heady kind of a doctrine. It surely appeals to a person's flesh, you know, because basically what this doctrine declares is that the whole world is waiting for you to be manifested as the sons of God. That there's going to come in the last days a great power of God's Spirit upon the church, and God is going to manifest himself through you, his church, and you're going to be endowed with all kinds of supernatural powers, and you're going to go over to Moscow, and you're going to start pointing at the tanks, and they're going to start dissolving, and you're going to go through the hospitals and empty them all, and the whole world is just waiting for you to be manifested. And so the idea is to let's all just sit and just get perfected and get the church perfected so that God can manifest himself in the perfected church. And this is in reality the second coming of Jesus Christ. That he's not coming physically or bodily, but he's going to be coming in his church to be manifested through his church to the world. And the whole world is just groaning and travailing as they're waiting for you to be manifested. Sounds pretty wonderful, doesn't it? The powerful finger. Sad that people even give the time of the day to such a doctrine. For Paul tells us in just a little bit what the manifestation of the sons of God really is. And that's the problem. These people never read the context. They just grab the phrase that they want out of a verse and never bother to look at the context of that particular verse. And we'll see it in its context in a moment. For the creature, that is man, was made subject to emptiness. Not willingly, but by reason of him who has subjected the same in hope. When God created man, he created him incomplete. More ways than one. When God created Adam, God said, "It is not good that man shall live alone." He's not complete. Let's make a woman in order that man might be complete. And gals, we're just not complete without you. We frankly confess it. God saw that there was no companion for man. Man was not complete. It is not good that man should live alone. And so God created the woman that man might have completeness, companionship, love, and beauty. And God brought her to man, and she became his wife. But there's another incompleteness of man. There is another emptiness in man. And this emptiness only God can fill. Dr. Henry Drummond who wrote that classic book, The Natural and the Supernatural, declares in that book that there is within the very protoplasm of man those little tentacles that are reaching out for God. Man was made for God. Man can never be satisfied until he is in union with God. Man is incomplete without God. There's a basic emptiness of man apart from God. And so the creature, God created him, subject to this emptiness. By reason of him who created him, that he might be subjected in hope. God created man with this emptiness so that man would seek after God to find that fulfillment and meaning for life. And he has subjected the same in hope. Because the creature itself shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. One day I'm going to be freed from this old body, from this bondage of corruption, and I'm going to come into that glorious liberty and freedom. For we know that the whole creation is groaning and travailing in pain together until now. Not only man, but all of creation is groaning under the curse of sin. And not only all of creation, but ourselves also, which even have the first fruits of the Spirit. Even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. That's what he's talking about, the manifestation of the sons of God, when I have a redeemed body. In writing to the Corinthians in his second epistle, chapter 5, Paul said, "For we know when this earthly tent, our body, is dissolved, that we then have a building of God that is not made with hands, that is eternal in the heavens. So then, we who are still living in these bodies do often groan, for we ourselves also groan within ourselves." We groan earnestly desiring to be delivered. From what? From this old tent in which I'm living. Not that I would be unclothed or an unembodied creature, but that I might be clothed upon with the body which is from heaven. For I know as long as I'm living in this body, I'm absent from the Lord, but I would rather be absent from this body and to be present with the Lord. So the same idea that he is presenting here is presented there in 2 Corinthians 5, of that groaning, earnestly desiring to be freed from this body that is limited and restricted and often seeks to bring me into bondage. The bondage of corruption. And so we ourselves groan. We who are in these bodies do often groan earnestly desiring to be delivered, to move out of them, not to be an unembodied creature, but to be clothed upon or to move into that body which God has in heaven. Now, interesting, Paul is comparing or likening this body to a tent. And whenever you think of a tent, you don't think of a permanent place to live. We had to live in a tent for 2 years, our church here. And it had its, qualities, I guess. It had its interest. It had its smells of those old kerosene heaters. And, of course, the tent blew over, and it had holes in it. And it got awfully cold at night, and there were disadvantages. It was a glorious day when we moved out of that tent and into this new sanctuary. And we were able to sit not on those hard metal chairs and not walk on the black asphalt and not have to be subjected to that loud noise of those blowing heaters and smell the kerosene. But we were able to sit here in the upholstered pews, walk on the carpets, and enjoy the comforts of this more permanent home. Now, there is a likening, but it falls short, because that house that God has for me in heaven is eternal. That new model or that new body that I am going to get is going to be my eternal house. Right now, I'm living in a tent, this body. It's transient. Hey, it's beginning to have its problems. The threads are getting a little old, beginning to rip a lot easier. When it rains, it's starting to leak. It's getting uncomfortable. And we who are in these bodies do often groan earnestly, desiring to be delivered, not to be unembodied, but to be clothed upon with the body which is from heaven. Jesus said, "Let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. For in my Father's house there are many mansions, and I'm going to prepare one for you. And if I go and prepare one for you, then I'm going to come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also." Now, what do you picture when Jesus says that? Colonial style? Surrounded by beautiful gardens? I really think that Jesus was talking about what Paul was talking about in 2 Corinthians 5. That mansion is that new body that he's prepared for you. I'm going to move from this tent into that new mansion, into that new building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Now, that new body doesn't grow tired. It doesn't require sleep. Therefore, if I had a new mansion, I wouldn't need any bedrooms. We ourselves, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, we groan within ourselves as we wait for this work of God, that is, the redemption of our body. For we are saved by hope. But hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man sees, why does he yet hope for it? When you finally see it, it becomes then a rational reality. It's no longer the realm of hope. Hope is always in something not yet seen. And so God has subjected us in hope as we hope for that day and we hope for that kingdom. But we are hoping for that which we see not. Then with patience we're waiting for it. Now likewise, the Spirit also helps our weaknesses. For we do not know what we should pray for as we ought. But the Spirit himself will make intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. So creation is groaning. I'm groaning. The Spirit is groaning. Waiting for that perfect work of God. But the Spirit's groaning has a purpose within my life. As the Spirit helps my other weaknesses. Now, by the Spirit, I'm mortifying the deeds of the flesh. By the Spirit, I'm receiving that sense of adoption where I'm crying, "Abba, Father." For it is the Spirit that is bearing witness to me that I am a child of God. And now the Spirit is helping my weakness in my prayer life. Because I don't always know what God's particular will is in a particular situation. And not knowing the will of God, then it is difficult often to pray, because it doesn't really make sense to pray against the will of God. And the purpose of prayer is never to accomplish my will. The real purpose of prayer is always to accomplish God's will. And if I think of prayer as an instrument by which I can get my will done, I totally misunderstand prayer, as do so many evangelists today. That was never God's intention, that prayer should be the instrument by which man can accomplish his will upon the earth. Prayer is the instrument by which we cooperate with God in the accomplishing of his will upon the earth. As Jesus said, "Not my will, thy will be done." And that is always the real thrust of prayer. But I always do not know what God's will is. And therein is where the Spirit steps in and he helps me, and he will make intercession for me with groanings which cannot be uttered. Have you ever groaned in the Spirit? I groan often when I see the conditions of the world around me. I groan often when I see the conditions and needs of people around me, because often I don't know how to pray. But he that searches the hearts knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because he makes intercession for the saints according to the will of God. You know, to me it is such a simple, beautiful thing. God has made prayer such a simple, beautiful thing. If I don't know how to pray, and I want to pray according to the will of God, and here's my friend John over here, and I really don't know how to pray for his situation. I really don't know what God is doing in his life, but I know John needs prayer. God's made it so simple. I can say, "God, I bring John before you." Oh. Now, God, you interpret that. And you know, the amazing thing to me is that God can interpret it as intercession according to his will. That's what we are told here. The Spirit will help our weaknesses through groanings which really cannot be uttered. For he knows what is the mind of the Father, and he will make intercession according to his will. Glory. I love it. Verse 28, "And we know that most things work together for good to them that love God." How many times have you interpreted it that way? Well, I know, but not this case, you know. I don't see how in this case. Many times I'm willing to acknowledge, "Oh, yes, God's going to work out good in this. You see, I can see how God can work this." Yeah, mm-hmm. Most things do work together for good to those who love God. Not of what it says, is it? "And we know that all things." You know, I have found such rest and comfort in this verse when I am faced, as I am often faced, with situations that I can't understand. Disappointments, setbacks, things that I just don't understand, and I'm prone to be concerned or worried or get upset, and then this verse will come to mind. "And we know that all things are working together for good to those who love God and are the called according to his purpose." And I've rested in this verse over and over and over again. Now, as I have told you, you are not going to always understand your circumstances. There are going to be many things that will happen to you of which, though you do your best, you're not going to be able to understand it or figure it out. And when you come against that which you can't understand, it is important that you have certain foundations that you do understand, and you fall back on the foundations. What do I understand? I understand that God loves me. How do I know? The Bible tells me so. I understand that God is wiser than I am. I understand that God is in control of all of the circumstances that surround my life. Thus, anything that happens to me only happens to me because God has allowed it to happen to me. It could not happen to me unless God did allow it to happen to me. And God loves me and is working out what is best for me. Thus, I can rest in the most uncomfortable places. I rest in faith that God is even going to use this for my good and His glory. Now, if you will just take this and file it up here to where you'll live by it, you won't have to come to Romaine and get his hammer on your head. You know, things start going wrong. Oh, got to talk to somebody, you know. Hey, wait a minute. God's in control. God loves you. And God knows what's going on, and God is working, even in this situation, His good purpose in your life, for all things work together for good to those who love God and are the called according to His purpose.
Looking to build a stronger home or encourage someone else to do the same? The Word for Today is excited to offer the Marriage and Family MP3 series, a powerful collection of teachings from Pastor Chuck Smith, filled with biblical wisdom and real-life encouragement. In this series, Pastor Chuck shares God's timeless truth for relationships, covering the blessings of both personal and marital life, as well as scriptural roles of husbands and wives. You'll hear messages like the husband's role, the wife's role, sweetening up a our relationship, training our children, and more. Whether you're newly married, raising kids, or simply wanting to invest in your relationships, this series is for you. And it's a great gift for family members or friends who could use a little extra encouragement in their home life. Order the Marriage and Family MP3 series today at twft.com or call 1-800-272-9673. That's 1-800-272-WORD.
Now may the Lord be with you and watch over you and keep you through the week. May you be strengthened by His Spirit in your inner man. And may you, through the understanding of the Spirit, begin to comprehend how much He really loves you. The full depth of God's love for you. May He watch over you and may you find your strength, your help in Him.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Romans on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible, and we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of the Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. There you'll find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. You can also call us at 1-800-272-9673, or you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning Romans 8. Again, that phone number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today.
Little country church on
program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.